Good afternoon. Welcome to Community News covering the towns of Shrewsbury, Northborough, Westborough, and Southborough. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we'll be bringing you the latest editions of The Community Advocate, MySouthborough.com, and the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. This is Mike Gregory, today reading with John Riccio, and we're coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And to begin the program, here is John with news and events from Westborough.
Thank you, Mike. Westborough residents can throw axes at soon-to-open spot. Looking to blow off some steam? A new spot coming to Westborough is looking forward to helping you do just that. iSmash is planning to open at 276 Turnpike Road, the plaza that includes Coffee and Pie, Domino's Pizza, and Westborough Nail and Spa. iSmash will be situated in a 6,400-square-foot unit on the end of the plaza on the side closest to Chick-fil-A. iSmash offers rage rooms, spaces where customers can take sledgehammers and bats to fragile objects in an effort to let loose. There's also splatter paint and axe-throwing activities, and the space will host birthday parties and corporate events. iSmash markets itself as a mess-free, totally safe space where you can truly let loose without any consequences. Designed to provide you with an unforgettable experience, iSmash Rage Rooms let you smash your way through stress, with sessions ranging from 20 to 50 minutes. The Westborough location will be iSmash's first in Massachusetts. The company has over 20 franchises located across the United States. Plans for the Westborough iSmash, filed with the town, call for a party smash room, several group smash rooms, a laser maze room, several paint rooms, and lots of storage space, presumably to keep all the items that will inevitably be destroyed. You know, as a rule, we don't often read obituaries, but I have one today that I feel should be read just because of the age this person reached. Hedwig E. Lagerman, 102. Hedwig E. Hattie Lagerman, born August 15, 1923, and died June 11, 2026, was 102 years old. Her husband, Harold, predeceased her in 1989. She is survived by her son-in-law, Paul George, her grandsons, Christopher George, who lived with her at 19 Robin Road in Westborough, and David George and his wife, Paige George, who live in Jacksonville, Florida, and her twin great-grandsons, Nicholas George and Matthew George, and their mother, Christine George, who live in Sturbridge. Her children, Leonard Lagerman and Dorothy George, predeceased her 15 and 8 years ago, respectively. Her life was celebrated on July 12th at the Westborough Knights of Columbus Hall from 12 to 4 p.m. Pickering and Son Westborough Funeral Home assisted the family. Fabric of the Community. Meet this year's Commonwealth Heroines. Commonwealth Heroines are women who don't often make the news, but who truly make a difference. The Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women partners with state legislatures to identify women who make outstanding contributions to their organizations and communities. Each legislator is encouraged to submit one woman from their constituency as means of recognizing their invaluable efforts. The winners are celebrated in June. The community advocate spoke with four Commonwealth heroines from local communities. And following is the one from Westboro. Bringing local television coverage to Westboro requires immense sacrifice. For Karen Henderson, the general manager at Westboro TV, it often takes the form of early mornings, busy afternoons, and late nights. She is away from family for evening meetings, darts around Westboro from event to event, and covers athletics in a variety of inclement weather. During the job's toughest moments, when it's 10 p.m. and a four-hour meeting seems nowhere close to wrapping up, Henderson finds meaning in her work. After all, her role is indispensable. She's practically part of the fabric of the community. I feel like we just hold up a mirror to all the good things happening in Westboro. It's all about sharing good and informative stories, Henderson told the community advocate. We're making a video scrapbook of Westboro. Though her role is mostly behind the scenes, Henderson was recently honored in a major way, nominated by Representative Kate Donahoe and Representative Hannah Kane. Henderson was named a 2026 Commonwealth Heroine. The award, presented by the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women, is given to individuals who make a difference and use their time, talent, spirit, and enthusiasm to enrich the lives of others in their communities. Raised in Connecticut by parents who gave a lot back to their community, Henderson has been deeply involved in Westboro since she moved to town. She served for 7 years on the school committee and eventually found herself on the town's cable television advisory committee. Around that time, Donna Kelly was stepping down as the leader of Westboro TV. Though she had no cable background, Henderson loved being involved in Westboro and knew many of the town's stakeholders through her volunteerism. I thought, maybe I'm interested in that job. I didn't have a video background, but I knew a lot of people in town. I'd worked with a lot of boards, and I had communication skills. I threw my hat in the ring, and, for some reason, they hired me, said Henderson. Led by Henderson and her talented staff of Aiden Horrigan and Tim Schwab, Westboro TV covers hundreds of government meetings per year, giving residents unparalleled access to proceedings. Old meetings are archived and can be accessed, allowing people to watch conversations that shaped the town. It helps our government operate better, Henderson said. But Westboro TV has perhaps its biggest impact outside of Town Hall. Henderson covers preschool events, middle school productions, and Westboro High happenings. Parents in Westboro can practically watch their child's upbringing, all thanks to Henderson's efforts. A variety of ribbon cuttings, concerts, and ceremonies are also part of the organization's wide-ranging coverage. Some of the things we do matter a lot to a lot of people. Some of the things we do matter a little bit to a lot of people. And some things we do matter a lot to just a few people. To me, all of those are important. For me, it's covering something that's important to someone and that matters to me, Henderson said. Henderson, who wanted to be a teacher and had a certification in secondary education, also runs the TV journalism program, working with Westboro High School students to produce newscasts and podcasts. Whether she's covering school events, senior center activities, or more, Henderson is there for the community. And ultimately, every piece of footage is an effort to bring Westboro closer together. So much for me is building and engaging the community, she said. I love that piece of it. It's that fabric of the community. We're covering so many different things that happen, touching and impacting every part of town. I love that soup to nuts aspect. Her advice to others? I am a huge believer in getting involved. Nobody has ever volunteered for something and wished they didn't do that. There are so many great organizations in Westboro, and you just get back what you give, said Henderson. Eighty-eight-year-old Westboro pickleball coach is trailblazer for women's sports. By 8 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, dozens of local players aged 55 and older have already gathered paddles in hand, ready for the morning's drop-in program at the Nelson Ball pickleball courts at Lake Chauncey. At the center stands Carol Bishop, Westboro's dedicated pickleball coordinator. Bishop is the friendly face who greets each participant by name as they arrive. But to those who play under her guidance, she's the tactical engine that makes Westboro pickleball thrive. Before the clock strikes 11 a.m., Bishop will have mixed and matched dozens of players into balanced teams of four. After each match, she rotates the groups, so everyone plays multiple games with different teammates each time. Bishop's success on the courts is no accident. It's the culmination of a lifetime spent breaking barriers and coaching athletics. Long before pickleball became a national phenomenon, Bishop was a feisty teenager fighting for the chance to play basketball like the boys did. Growing up in Chicago in the 1950s, when organized girls' teams did not exist, she honed her skills playing with neighborhood boys. Determined not to let anything keep her off the court, she would diligently complete her homework, then quietly crawl out of the bathroom window to slip away and play ball, all without her mother knowing. At the time, the landscape for female athletes was virtually non-existent. There were no organized girls' teams or opportunities for competitive play. Rather than accept the status quo, Bishop became a trailblazer. She personally organized the first girls' basketball teams at her junior and senior high schools, where she averaged an astonishing 40 points per game. She eventually dominated the Chicago Parks District and AAU circuits, capturing citywide championships in softball and volleyball. Her athletic prowess quickly caught the attention of professional scouts. Though recruited to play professional softball, Bishop chose higher education instead, heading to Wheaton College in Illinois. There, she captained the basketball and field hockey teams, played number two singles in tennis, and led the basketball team. These historic achievements culminated in 2008 with her induction into the Wheaton College Hall of Fame. Bishop later translated that elite athletic drive into a 36-year career as a physical education teacher, inspiring students at Doherty Memorial High School and South Community High School in Worcester. As a coach, she led high school teams across six different sports, guiding the Doherty girls' tennis team to nine district titles. Bishop also served as a basketball official for 32 years and became the president of the Central Massachusetts Board of Women Officials. Under Bishop's watch, the Westboro pickleball program has grown into more than just a sports clinic. It has become a vital social hub for the town's older adults, fueled by the passion of a woman who spent her life proving that sports belong to everyone. Finally, another reminder of the summer concert series taking place at the Salmon organization at Westboro, The Spirit of Sound. Tomorrow night is Stomp and Holler, and the following Wednesday, July 22nd, is the Amity Street Brass Quintet. That's from 7 to 8:15. Concessions open at 6:30, and it takes place at the Willows at Westboro on Lyman Street. And that ends our Westboro portion of the program today. After the next public service announcement, Mike will be back with everything you need to know from Shrewsbury.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northboro, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system? Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.
Welcome back. You're listening to Community News, a production of Audio Journal. The time is approximately 4:16. And now we'll get into news and events from Shrewsbury. Longtime Westboro High School principal Brian Callaghan to leave district for a new role in Shrewsbury. After 13 years as principal of Westboro High School, Brian Callaghan is leaving the district to accept a role with Shrewsbury Public Schools. After a competitive application process, the school committee voted on July 8th to appoint Callaghan as the district's new assistant superintendent for well-being and community systems. The position that Superintendent Tiffany Ostrander is developing it into is something very intriguing. It's more about what the district wants to do moving forward with the position, building up the community and the sense of well-being, belonging, and developing the partnership with the schools, Callaghan told the Community Advocate. A Merrimack College graduate, Callaghan taught history in West Boylston, eventually coming to Westboro in 2000 to serve as the high school's athletic director. After a stint as an assistant principal, Callaghan became the Westboro High School principal in 2013. After all his time in Westboro, Callaghan said he'd missed the community immensely. I've been here for 26 years and I've loved it. The district supported me. I feel like I've been committed at a high level to Westboro and I'm going to miss it. That's the simple answer. I think there's opportunity for me professionally in Shrewsbury, and to be honest, I feel that there's opportunity for Westboro. They're going to bring another person who's going to make it better than what I was able to do, he said. In deliberations on July 8th, Ostrander told the school committee that Callaghan was a student-centered, collaborative leader who approaches complex problems with curiosity, respect, and practical solutions. Throughout the process, we were continually struck by Mr. Callaghan's leadership style. He listens first, builds relationships intentionally, and earns trust through collaboration. These qualities are truly essential for this position, said Ostrander. The school committee shared Ostrander's enthusiasm. When I walked out of the interview, I was confident we had found the unicorn we were looking for. He really stood out in the interview process, said school committee chair Rachel Sharifapour. The school committee's vote was unanimous. Callaghan has yet to officially sign his contract in Shrewsbury. Details of that agreement are still being worked out. Reached for comment, Westboro Superintendent Allison Borches said that her district looks forward to communicating next steps with the community soon. Callaghan will take over for Dr. Jane Lozotte, who devoted decades to Shrewsbury Public Schools in multiple roles and became the first person in this assistant superintendent position. Lozotte retired in June, and Callaghan looks forward to building on the strong foundation she established. Shrewsbury is a high-performing, high-quality school system with dedicated staff, respectful students, and a committed community. I couldn't be happier. If I were to leave Westboro for another district, I couldn't imagine anywhere else other than Shrewsbury, Callaghan said. We're fortunate to have really strong school systems here in central Massachusetts. What should Empire Dry Cleaning become? Debate draws record interest. Shrewsbury has never seen this type of interest before. The future of the now defunct Empire Dry Cleaning lot at 15 Maple Ave is drawing record interest with over 1,015 responses to a town-wide sponsored survey meant to gauge the residents they'd like to see happen to this centrally located property. Founded in 1972, The cleaner closed in the 2010s. The property owed over $300,000 in taxes and fees, including leading the town to foreclose on the property. The case sat in land court for several years, but the foreclosure was finalized on November 2025. The building has been appraised for $280,000. It's now town-owned property. Empire Dry Cleaning is a brownfield site contaminated with volatile organic compounds from the operational use and accidental fuels releases and spills. The plot has been through Mass DEP process, and there is minimal risk going forward, Town Manager Kevin Mizikar said in 2025. So what did this survey say? Approximately 32% of respondents favored turning the site into a recreational space. There was a desire for a spot for middle school students who often walk from Sherwood and Oak to the center of town to congregate with games, courts, and a playground. Suggestions also included creating a green space, a community garden, a park, gathering spot, benches, picnic tables, and landscaping. Another 30% of people preferred parking, which would support existing and future local businesses that may be currently hampered by the lack of accessibility. The parking could help with attracting small businesses, cafes, coffee shops, or bakeries to create a vibrant destination. What people didn't want to see was either becoming a monument, a bus stop, or another bus stop. And with that, we're going to move on to the next article. Centec sold for $75 million. A Shrewsbury industrial site has been sold. Centec Park North has been sold for $75 million, according to the Worcester Registry of Deeds. Parcels include the 19.4-acre site at 384 South Street, currently valued at $16 million, and the 17-acre site at 721 Hartford Turnpike, valued at approximately $9 million. The site was transferred from NBP Shrewsbury LLC to EIPOT Centec Logistics, according to the registry. NBP was based in Wakefield, while EIPOT principal office is located in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. Formerly known as the Allen property, or Allen Farm, Centec Park North is the culmination of a decade-long effort to find productive uses for the 60-acre lot. In 2002, Shrewsbury Development Corporation was formed to facilitate the redevelopment of the property. After years of business-friendly practices designed to attract commercial development, the property was sold in 2021 to NBP LLC for $6.5 million. Centec Park North was subsequently developed, and gradually since that point, Northbridge has been leasing out the property. Currently, the site has a variety of tenants, including Repligen and Columbia Tech. John earlier read a story about a Commonwealth heroine in Westboro, and we have a Commonwealth heroine here in Shrewsbury. It takes a very little effort to change someone's life. Decades ago, Shannon Wall was working at the Ground Round when she came across a young woman studying for her citizenship exams. Using her degree in history, Wall decided to help her prepare. It was a small act of kindness that Wall promptly forgot about. Until about 5 years ago, when Wall was dining at Jimmy's. Out of nowhere, the woman came running toward her, crying and thanking her for her help all those years ago. For Wall, it was 5 minutes of kindness. For this woman, it was everything. You changed my life, she said. There are always little ways you can contribute, Wall told the community advocate. It's that philosophy that motivates everything Wall does. A proud Shrewsbury resident, she wears many hats and is involved in several different organizations that seek to make a difference, no matter how small, in people's lives. In May, Wall was honored as a 2026 Commonwealth Heroine, an award bestowed upon women who positively impact their communities. The honor is presented by the Massachusetts Commission on the Status of Women. Representative Kane nominated Wall, saying she uses her time, talent, and spirit and enthusiasm to enrich the lives of others in the town of Shrewsbury. I think a lot of people feel pressed for time, but there are lots of ways to get involved and contribute, Wall told the community advocate. You can find ways to support things, and every little bit matters. If we have a lot of people helping and each person does a little, we can get a lot done. Those little things you might think are irrelevant or unimportant, that might actually be big. It takes very little effort to change someone's lives. Wall graduated from Shrewsbury High School in 1995 and almost immediately got involved around the community, becoming a town meeting member. For the last year, she's served as the president of the Shrewsbury Rotary, volunteering around town and helping residents. She's also involved with the Shrewsbury Democratic Town Committee, serves as a trustee for the New England Botanical Garden in Tower Hill, is also a trustee for the Treehouse Foundation, an organization that builds award-winning, replicable communities that support foster and adoptive families. She served on the Spring Street School Parent-Teacher Organization. Her various volunteering roles focus on different topics, but all of them are meant to give back. Once you get started, it's easy to find your way, find your space, and find where you can make a difference, said Wall. I grew up in a very service-driven family. We're very blessed, and we live in a beautiful community, and now we use our skills to make other people's lives the best life they can. Visibility isn't why Wall does the work, and she was absolutely stunned to become a Commonwealth heroine. She said she's hoping the recognition inspires others, including her daughters, Catherine, age 11, and Ella, age 8, to get involved in the world around them. Just a little help goes a long way. For me, it's the cause. Some work is more visible than others, but it may not be the visibility you desire. My goal and hope is that it inspires others to get involved. It's less about what I'm doing and more about volunteering a little bit can create such meaningful change in others, she said. How a grilled cheese divided a Shrewsbury neighborhood. A proposed gathering of food trucks led to an extended debate among residents of the Shrewsbury community in May, with residents petitioning the Zoning Board of Appeals to stop the event before it began. In late April, Teresa Goulet, the operator of a popular grilled cheese food truck, Say Cheese, came before the ZBA looking to organize weekly food truck nights at 440 Main Street, the site of Trinity Episcopal Church. The church is located between St. John's and the town center. Plans call for a food truck night every Wednesday from 4 to 7 p.m. About three trucks would be featured, with upwards of six trucks for special events. About 50 parking spaces were provided as part of the plans, with food trucks lining the perimeter of the property. Food truck night at the town hall was canceled this season, leaving limited options for residents. Goulet proposed the night at Trinity Episcopal as an alternative, allowing Shrewsbury residents and all who enjoy food trucks another space to congregate. Goulet is a pioneer in this town for food trucks. They show up every time they're called. I'm not ashamed to say I show up at food truck night more than I should. It's a fantastic event. Families gather here, other kids go there, we gather on the lawn. We have a blast, said residents Darlene Goulet. This is a critic. This is a citizen stepping up. But to other residents, the plan would be a travesty. Residents spoke candidly about traffic concerns, fear about where people would park should the 50 spaces be full, and concerns about the impact on potential endangered species that live in the woodlands behind the church. Smells and noise could also become a nuisance, they said. The adjacent neighborhood is zoned residential. This is a residential zone. We live in this area because it's a beautiful town. We love the area we're in because it's a residential zone. We hope you can take this seriously. Having a business of food trucks across the street from us causes all sorts of safety issues, said neighbor Kathy Chow. Another neighbor, Malcolm Morville, said, I see this as an assault on the quiet enjoyment of my home. Other residents questioned, in a town like Shrewsbury, with plenty of places to hold an event, Trinity Episcopal was the ideal location. According to the event organizers, holding the event at Trinity is the crux of the problem. It was born from a place of trying to rescue Trinity Church, which is in dire financial straits. We're struggling. We have over 20 for active parishioners, and we're hoping that selfishly it would bring folks to Trinity and folks would be curious and come to the church, said Trinity Episcopal parishioner Joe Allen Brodura. We're not trying to commercialize. We're trying to do something for the community. Though most residents voiced their strong opposition to the plans, nobody criticized the food trucks or the church, with many going out of their way to say they would like the church to remain in the neighborhood, offering support for future events. The ZBA ultimately rejected the food trucks plans 3-2. I sympathize with the goals of the church. However, the issues of noise, odor, smoke, and traffic generated and potential unsightliness, as they are named in the statute, are a large risk factor for me, said Z Board member David Moore. I want to say yes for your cause, but with the statute, I don't think we can get there. And with that, we'll close our news and events from Shrewsbury, and after the next public service announcement, John will be back to continue the program with news and events from Northborough.
Bay State Council of the Blind is an organization created by and for people with vision loss. We seek to improve the lives of people who are blind and those who have low vision in Massachusetts. We work on accessibility, advocacy, and all walks of life. Transportation, voting, employment, education, health, and the arts. We enjoy getting together to socialize and to support each other. Our Central Mass chapter meets in Worcester every other month on the third Saturday at 10 a.m. in person and on Zoom. We are currently meeting at the offices of Audio Journal at 799 West Boylston Street in Worcester. We are trying to resume a few social events now, and we definitely work on advocacy issues such as monitoring our Massachusetts Commission for the Blind Services and local transportation. For more information, please call Bay State Council of the Blind Central Mass Chapter President Mary Haroyan at 774-232-8036. That's Mary Haroyan at 774-232-8036. Or send an email to mharoyan@charter.net. That's mharoyan@charter.net. We welcome you into our community.
And now here's John with news and events from Northborough.
Thank you, Mike. State trooper killed in off-duty accident, honored by neighbors. At 4 p.m. on June 30th, residents lined the sidewalks of Old Colony Drive in Westboro. It was a hot afternoon and rain was in the forecast, but still, they stood in solidarity. Some helped older neighbors get situated near the street. The neighborhood was mourning one of its own, Jacob G. Mick, a Massachusetts State Police trooper who tragically passed away in an off-duty motorcycle accident in Grafton on June 28th. He was 31 years old and lived with his wife, Kayla, and infant daughter, Natalie, on Old Colony Drive. As Mick's body was transported from Westfield to Hayes Funeral Home in Northborough, the hearse drove past Mick's house as family members, neighbors, and solemn bystanders waited. At least 50 Massachusetts State Police vehicles were part of the procession. "This neighborhood sticks together," said Jeffrey Spofford, who lives on Old Colony Drive. "This is a terrific neighborhood filled with people who care about one another. People here are feeling this. They're part of us. The family has this beautiful little daughter, and you can't imagine something as tragic as this." Mick was raised in Hudson, later moving to Northborough and graduating from Algonquin Regional High School with the class of 2013. He was a member of the hockey team. Mick earned a bachelor's degree in business from Worcester State University. He started a successful career in law enforcement, working for the Stowe Police Department and Northborough Police Department, where his mother, Katie, has served as a dispatcher for many years. "He was a dedicated public servant who made a lasting impact on our department and throughout our community," the Northborough Police Department said in a statement. "Our thoughts and prayers are with the entire Mick family, Jake's friends, and the entire law enforcement community during this incredibly difficult time." Mick eventually completed his lifelong goal of becoming a trooper with the Massachusetts State Police after working with the 88th Recruit Training Troop. Assigned to the Holden Barracks, Mick quickly became someone others could depend on. He approached every situation with professionalism, humility, and unwavering integrity, the state police said. Together, we mourn Trooper Jacob Mick and extend our deepest sympathies to his wife, their infant daughter, his family, and all who loved him. He was a proud trooper and public servant who never hesitated to answer the call. We remember and honor Trooper Mick's years of service and all he gave to the Commonwealth, as well as to the department, said Superintendent of the State Police, Jeffrey Noble. In his obituary, Mick was remembered as someone who served with pride, balanced obligation with respect and understanding, and was honored to stand beside the men and women who shared his commitment to protecting others. His obituary reads, "Those who knew Jake will remember his confidence, his infectious smile, and his ability to make others feel welcome. His unexpected and untimely passing leaves an immeasurable void in the lives of those who loved him, but the love and time he gave of himself will not be forgotten." Those on Old Colony Drive remembered Mick in a similar light. His wife grew up in the neighborhood, and many longtime residents of the street have known the family for generations. Since Mick passed, a state trooper has been posted outside his Old Colony Drive home. "They, the state police, are amazing people," Spofford told the community advocate. "Talk about a group that stays together. They take pride in it. This event today was as moving as you'll ever see." Proposed 130-foot cell tower dividing Northborough. The Northborough Planning Board on June 25th opted to continue a long-running public hearing regarding the proposed installation of a 130-foot cell tower at 409 Green Street near Tugas Family Farm. After a series of disagreements, board members decided to seek guidance from town council before taking a final vote. Tower Co. and Verizon submitted the application seeking approval to construct a 9-antenna monopole with a 70-by-70-foot enclosure. While many residents have argued the pole would be unsightly, Verizon claims there's a substantial gap in cell coverage. Verizon's legal representative, attorney Michael Fenton, argued that the tower is necessary to provide adequate coverage. He also said that some neighbors have supported the project, including the mother of an autistic child who lives on Green Street, who was very concerned about the safety implications of not having reliable cellular coverage. When coming to a decision, the planning board must focus on Verizon's coverage, not the capabilities of other providers. Furthermore, federal law doesn't recognize local boundaries, meaning that the planning board must disregard town lines in its decision. Many residents were concerned that the tower was being put in their town for the benefit of neighboring communities like Boylston. A petition signed by 262 people, 141 of whom were from Northborough, urged the board to deny the height waiver, which would permit the 130-foot pole to surpass the 75-foot height maximum. The petition argued that the tower would starkly contrast with the scenic roadways and recreation areas. "It is crucial that we uphold the integrity of our zoning laws," the petition stated, calling the tower an unnecessary expansion. A 75-foot pole, which meets current zoning, would likely fill the coverage gap within Northborough, said Michael Lawton, a consultant who spoke on behalf of Northborough. Many residents saw the 130-foot pole as a move that put profit over people. The extra height could allow for more co-locators or tenants, thus making the tower more money, some residents speculated. Adam Warofsky, who lives on Green Street, stated that he feels the tower is for the benefit of Boylston over Northborough. If a 75-foot tower isn't good enough for Verizon, then why is 130 feet good enough? It's because it's all about the financial gain, he said. A significant portion of the meeting was dedicated to how the tower might benefit Northborough's emergency services. Mark Cady, a radio frequency consultant, expressed that the tower would be a critical component to the town's public safety plan for the future. A month ago, the Northborough Police Department sounded the alarm about its poor radio infrastructure, including spotty communication abilities with dispatch that sometimes endangers officers. Verizon had offered the town free space on the tower for municipal antennas, and the planning board emphasized that it cares about public safety. But there were unanswered questions about how the new setup would function. If this tower is approved, it would be great to have it as an opportunity for that eventual design, but we can't quantify what it will bring or what it won't bring for the public safety at this point, Lawton told the planning board. The board remains undecided, recognizing the complex criteria surrounding the decision. I definitely don't want to get it wrong, Planning Board Chair Amy Poretsky said. Pledge of Allegiance to return to select board meetings. The Pledge of Allegiance is back at Town Hall. The Northborough Select Board voted 4-1 on June 22nd to restart the practice of saying the Pledge of Allegiance before official business. The board stopped saying the Pledge of Allegiance during the pandemic when virtual meetings became the norm and participants didn't always have access to a flag. Since returning to in-person meetings, the pledge has not been reinstated. Jeff Amberson, a Northborough resident, asked the board to resume saying the pledge at a prior meeting. Since that point, Facebook posts and a community advocate poll sparked community discourse informing the select board's vote. It's important enough for people to participate like that, whether it's on social media or in a poll, select board member Leslie Rutan said, noting that during her previous 18 years of service on the board, the pledge was recited at the start of every meeting without controversy. The community advocate poll was split, with 53% arguing the board shouldn't have to say the pledge. Discussions on Facebook and formal public feedback submitted to the select board skewed pro-pledge. The discourse divided the community, said Select Board Chair Jonathan Ray, revealing a certain ugliness. I don't think anyone's going to question the patriotism of anyone that's volunteering for this board, Ray said. My grandfather was in the Korean War, and I love this country, but I also don't like some of the xenophobia I read, some of the words I saw, some of the accusations about people not being American. There's an ugliness that comes from all this. Several board members emphasized that choosing not to recite the pledge should not be viewed as a lack of patriotism. Select board member Julianne Hirsch voted against the measure, arguing that saying the pledge before meetings isn't necessary, and that serving in an elected office is itself an overt expression of patriotism. I think we have to acknowledge in this political climate there is a division, and bringing this topic forward now has obviously already divided us, Hirsch said. I don't see how saying the pledge at the beginning of meetings is going to advance our business. It's a declaration of patriotism, but aren't I patriotic enough by volunteering to serve? and everyone else who comes or watches the meetings? Board members supporting the motion countered that the pledge is a nonpartisan civic ritual intended to be a uniting force. The flag and the republic that it stands for belongs to everybody, Select Board Vice Chair Michael Cheechin said. For people to go on social media or emails saying that it's only for my group or my skin color or my religious group, that's not what the Pledge of Allegiance is asking you to stand up and repeat. And that will end our session of the news from Northborough. After the next public service announcement, Mike will be back to fill us in on what's going on in Southborough.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
And now to conclude the program, we'll bring you news and events from Southborough. Southborough Police drone program to launch in the fall. When the Southborough Police Department needs a drone, such as for help in finding a missing child, it must seek mutual aid from nearby departments. But pretty soon that will change. That's because the Southborough Select Board, in a 3-2 vote on June 29th, approved spending $105,000 to start a drone program. We've had 3 instances out of 9 using another department's drones in the past year that were missing children, said Police Chief Ryan Newell. I feel like just one of those incidents justifies the cost. Newell proposed using money left over from the fiscal 2026 budget because spending it had been approved before June 30th. The money was available from the salary portion of the department's budget thanks to some unfilled positions and a state grant that paid for a portion of overtime. The $105,000 expenditure will cover the cost of the drone and other costs such as storage. In addition, the Faye School, a private day school for students in grade K through 9, is donating $40,000, $20,000 now, and another $20,000 in October. Newell said getting the drone is important for public safety. Along with the 3 missing children, Southborough used a drone in the past year to search for fleeing suspects and a missing adult with emotional distress. A drone was also used to search for a drowning victim recently. Southborough is the latest Metro West Police Department to start a drone program. Wayland started its program earlier this year. Ashland, Framingham, Hopkinton, Sudbury, Westboro, Milford, and Franklin are among other departments that have drone units. Although mutual aid helps, Newell said there's always concerns and delays. When Southborough calls for mutual aid, it usually takes about 30 minutes or more for a drone to get into the air. And he said if a community where the drone came from has an emergency, that would take precedent. If we have our own drone, it could be up in the air in 2 to 3 minutes, said Newell. He also said Southborough's topography makes drone a good tool. With Southborough being surrounded by woods and having several bodies of water, I think it would be good to have one on hand, said Newell. Currently, the department has 2 officers who are licensed to fly drones. Newell said the goal is to train several others so there is 1 trained officer on duty for each shift. That way, it can be used 24 hours a day. It also can be used for fires and other emergencies, said Newell. 2 select board members voted against the authorization, Kathy Cook and Andrew Pfaff. Each said they supported the department having a drone but preferred waiting for the fall town meeting to allow voters to decide on such a large expense. Newell said the drone would likely not be available for use until the fall. And in other police news, Southborough Police charges driver with OUI and drug possession after he allegedly nearly struck an officer. Recently, the Southborough Police Department posted a press release about an incident involving a driver alleged to have swerved dangerously close to hitting an officer on the side of Route 9. The driver isn't accused of intentionally attempting to hit the officer. Instead, the allegation is that the very dangerous driver was under the influence of drugs and driving erratically and recklessly. The incident resulted in an arrest and several charges being filed. The release also reminds the public that drivers are legally required to move over for emergency vehicles. And the statement from the police is, Chief Newell reports the Southborough police arrested a Franklin man on multiple drug charges after he nearly struck an officer, assisting another officer at a separate motor vehicle stop early Thursday morning. At approximately 1:20 a.m. on Thursday, July 9th, Southborough Police Officer Theodore Davis was assisting Officer Jeremy McCloskey at a traffic stop on Turnpike Road when a passing vehicle swerved dangerously close. Officer Davis returned to his cruiser and stopped the swerving vehicle. The driver, a 48-year-old Franklin resident, was arrested and charged with multiple offenses, including driving under the influence, unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle, obstructing operation of an uninsured motor vehicle, possession of a drug class B substance, and use of an electronic device while operating a vehicle under the influence. Transfer station fees going up and rules re-examined. Recently, the Select Board unanimously voted to increase the permit fees for the transfer station stickers for the coming season, which starts on September 15th. The biggest percentage increase was the still steeply discounted stickers for residents 65 and older. Under the new fee schedule, the price for the first permit per household will increase by $25 for all users. For non-seniors, the charge goes from $295 to $320, and for seniors, it increases from $50 to $75. Permits for additional permits will be $25 per vehicle. The static for non-seniors is but a $10 increase. The board also looked at proposed rule changes for transfer station use. On Tuesday night, after long discussion and debate over proposed changes to the swap shop rules, the board agreed to hold off on voting on the coming season's new rules until their August 11th meeting. That could complicate the town's efforts to communicate the new rules. Early in the discussion, DPW noted Director Cundiff noted that the new rules would be provided with the new stickers, but the DPW traditionally begins selling upcoming season stickers in July. Before voting to support the fee changes, Town Select Board member Tim Fling reassured the town would purchase the ability for people who need financial aid to have their fees waived. The fee changes were driven by an increased transfer station operating cost this year. One major factor was a $60,000 temporary increase due to retirement and staff changes. No one on staff is currently able to use the manual transmission tractor that hauls the waste. According to Superintendent Bill Cundiff, training and a specific license are required to operate the vehicle. For now, the DPW is hiring out for a function for 6 months while they get a 1 to 2 staff members trained to use the tractor. The town has typically sought to cover the $100,000 in transfer station operating expenses. That's been compromised and a point of contention past years, with some arguing that users should fully cover the costs, others advocating this should be a free public service to residents. Last night's Select Board Chair Kathy Cook stated that the origin of the figure was 20% of the operating costs. As she noted, that the rationale included the fact that the town itself is a transfer station user. The board considered a variety of scenarios, both ones presented by Cundiff and multiple members' suggestions. Other options included higher spike fees or put on a more burden on the town's budget. As it is, this year the cost covered by the town is projected to increase to $132,000. That's a big spike, given the presentation showed that over the past year the actual expense covered for fees was less than $85,000. In discussing the fairness of increasing senior fees, both Cook and member Sam Stivers, they've heard from many seniors that they can afford to pay the full price stickers. But Cook still didn't want to increase the fees to even the higher proposed $100 or $150. She argued that seniors don't dispose of as much trash. Southborough Fire Department honors recent firefighter actions. Recently, the Southborough Fire Chief publicly honored members of his department for their rescue efforts during emergencies that made recent headlines. In a ceremony at the start of the Select Board meeting, Chief Andrew Pontini recognized firefighters and EMTs for their swift actions in June at a scene of a tragedy and a near tragedy. One firefighter, William Kipp, was spotlighted for an extra honor for his risk of self. The chief began the ceremony by sharing sentiments he credited historically to Fire Department of New York Chief Edward Coker, who said, "When a man becomes a fireman, his greatest act of bravery has already been accomplished. What he does after that is all in the line of work. Our proudest moment is to save lives under the impulse of such thoughts. Nobility of the occupation thrills us to do daring deeds, even a supreme sacrifice." During the ceremony, the chief described the successful rescue of an injured tree worker on Pine Hill Road in June. Pontini recapped that the initial report came in that an injured worker was trapped in a tall tree. William Kipp immediately understood the complex nature of the call, and being a member of the Vermont Urban Search and Rescue Team, firefighter Kipp fortunately had his gear in the car. He quickly loaded the gear in the engine. On the scene, he spoke with the rescue crane operator, and the team activated the District 14 technical rescue, but didn't want to wait until the rescue team arrived. Kipp harnessed himself to the crane and ascended to the patient's side at 100 feet in the air. The patient's injuries were unknown, and the possibility of life-threatening injuries is not immediately treated was real. Firefighter Kipp made the patient contact, disengaged the patient from the tree, harnessed himself to the patient, and safely lowered him to the patient to the ground. And finally, just want to call your attention to the summer disco concert, which is going to take place on Thursday evening at the Neri School, Parkerville Road, from 6 to 8 p.m. Concert goers are encouraged to bring blankets or chairs. You can even bring dinner or purchase from Teddy's Lunch Truck. And again, that's 16th. That's Thursday night at 6 to 8 p.m. Community News Program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Archived editions of this program are available on our website. This is Mike Gregory, today reading with John Riccio.
This is Bird Note. Ecologist Adrian Doctor was entranced by birds at an early age.
I grew up in the Netherlands, close to the sea in the city of Haarlem. And, you know, there were a lot of migratory birds around. So I would climb on a dune top and sit there early in the morning and just see all these birds go by. I was very fascinated with common swifts. They're really the sound of the summer, and you hear them screeching over your house, even if you live in a city like I did. But the cool thing about these birds is they're really ultimate flyers.
Common swifts spend most of their lives in the air. They migrate thousands of miles between continents, feasting on flying insects, and even sleeping on the wing. In fact, the only time swifts need to land is while they're nesting.
And after that, they're just off, and they fly almost for 10 months, nonstop through the air. That really fascinated me, that birds can be so adapted to flight and just be such an ultimate flyer.
Today, Adrian uses weather radar to study how birds migrate and what people can do to protect them on their journey. Hear more about Adrian's research in Season 8 of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app and on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Joni Franklin.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.